It says I'm live, but my screen's black, so that's fun. Can you see me? Can you hear me? Well, I can see my face on that device, but not that device. 5x5, the Scoops 82. Awesome. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. It's still morning, but just barely. Lots of big rain here last night, still big rain ongoing. And so one of the benefits of having water is you have water, and we have a lot of surface water where we live because of the topography. But one of the potential drawbacks when you have a lot of surface water is when more water falls out of the sky, you might end up having too much surface water. And so for a lot of y'all that are considering strategic relocation coming out of Hear My People, when you're doing your research on the area you're going to relocate to, maybe up to and including an area study, look at the 100-year floodplain. It's a map. It's usually Googleable for your county or your district, the 100-year floodplain, because in a lot of places, a lot of land is very cheap, usually in areas with diverse topography. Because in 11 and a half months out of the year, there's nothing wrong with it until you get a big rain and then it's all underwater. And so just, we're fine. Everything's fine. There's no problems. But if you find a piece of land that's really too cheap, like it doesn't make sense. Why is this so cheap? Look at the 100-year floodplain. I actually passed on a piece of land not far from here. It's 80 acres of land, and it was ridiculously low priced and had been on the market forever. And the reason I passed on it was the same reason that everybody else passed on it. In a big rain, that piece of land, there was about 4 acres left of it that wouldn't have been underwater. So think about that. You know, when you're building infrastructure, 100-year floodplain. Okay, cool. It is the 25th of March, 2024. I am Bear from the internet. You guys know the drill. Do the YouTube thing, subscribe, hit the notify me icon, bell button thing, whatever it is, thumbs up for the YouTube algorithm. And please share the show with somebody you love. That's how we grow. Algorithmically, this channel hasn't grown organically in half a year to a year because YouTube doesn't love the things that we have to say, as evidenced by the fact I technically qualify for almost 2 silver play buttons at this time. And I have been told by YouTube, no, you can't have one. The subject matter of your channel falls outside the guidelines of YouTube and you don't get a silver play button. I've appealed it 3 times. Appeal's been rejected 3 times. And so the way that this show grows is organically when you guys and girls share it with people you love. So thank you to everybody who does that. Ace McLean, $5 super chat. I appreciate you very much. Typically on a Monday morning, we would do a brief, a written brief, but I'm feeling more like we need to do a coffee time with Bear this morning, which is a little bit more conversational. And I need the coffee, and it's barely still morning. We're pushing noontime here in Eastern Oklahoma. So if you're on Patreon, you have the written brief and you can read that. And many of you already have this morning based upon the comments that I've seen. But instead of Bear Reads Brief at Audience, there's 3 different articles that I wanted to take a look at this morning, conversationally. 2 are from RT, Russia Today, and 1 is from The Blaze. And the first one is titled Deaths in Nigeria After Aid Distribution Stampede. A large crowd reportedly gathered to receive $3.70 worth of donations at an event that descended into chaos on Sunday. $3.70 in donations. At least 7 people were killed in a stampede that occurred during the distribution of aid over the weekend in the city of Bauchi, I don't know, in northeastern Nigeria. Local media reported on Monday, citing the West African nation's authorities. Ahmed Wakalin, the Bauchi Police Command spokesperson, said in a statement published by local outlets that the victims included 4 women and 3 girls ranging in age from 8 to 55. Six of them were declared dead at the Abu Bakar Tafawa Balea University Teaching Hospital, while the other died at home, police said. The chaos broke out on Sunday when a crowd of residents gathered at the Shefa Holdings Company to reportedly receive 5,000 naira, approximately $3.70 each, at a charity event organized by a philanthropist. Such programs are mostly held during the Islamic holy month of Ramadan, when Muslims are encouraged to give charity. The authorities have said they are now investigating the cause of the incident. Probably desperate people who needed money and stampeded over each other to get at the money. My guess. The Bauchi stampede comes just days after some of the students, Kerry Stennett, bless you, bro, thank you. The Bauchi stampede comes just days after some of the students were injured during the distribution of rice at Nasarawa State University in north central Nigeria. That's the main reason we're here, is this paragraph right here. The Bauchi stampede comes just days after some students were injured during the distribution of rice at the Nasarawa State University in north central Nigeria. Now, in the big scheme of things, Nigeria is half a world away for most of us. And in the big scheme of things, we are not stampeding each other, praise the Most High, for $4 or some rice. But it does give us an insight into the characteristics and behaviors of humans when they're desperate. And given some of the writing on the wall that we can see in 2024 in the United States of America, there is the potential for things to become desperate in certain areas of the country. And so that's why this article stuck out to me. There are people stampeding over other human lives to get at $4 worth of money or a sack of rice. I don't know how many times I've said it, but I'll say it again. Don't get in the breadline. Don't go to where the breadline is. Food is one of the oldest weapons in the world. It's one of the oldest weapons in the world. Food can be weaponized against you. Arguably, it already has been here in the States. Because a lot of what is considered food here in the States is not actually food. A lot of what's sold as food in the United States, you're not allowed to sell in Europe because it doesn't conform to their standards on what food is. And without jumping into that rabbit hole, there's a lot of benefit to being able to produce your own food. One, from a physical security standpoint, I don't have to go to where the breadline is or where they're handing out sacks of rice, which is a great place to attack, by the way, because everybody, you're going to have a group of people who've been shoehorned into an area who are desperate. I mean, Black Hawk Down, that was over food, that began over food. So controlling the ebb and flow of food is a great way to weaponize food, and also controlling what's in the air quote food is a great way to weaponize food. The remainder of this article, a couple more paragraphs here. Africa's most populous country has been plagued by food insecurity and economic hardship since mid-2023. So mid-2023 is only about 9 months ago. Remember, we were reading on Friday, I believe it was, in Gaza, went from relative food stability to famine in 5 months. Now here in Nigeria, this country has been plagued by food insecurity and economic hardship since mid-2023. Well, we're in the third month of 2024, so that's roughly 9 months. Gone from relative, maybe things aren't great, but there is some modicum of food stability, to people getting trampled for food in 9 months. These timelines are important to me because if you ever thought, well, how much food do I need for how long? That number varies for everybody. The number that the Father gave me is 7 years. I don't tell y'all to stock 7 years worth of food because it scares a bunch of you. So you begin with what you can do, right? You build out a week's worth and a couple weeks worth of extra food in your pantry at the house or your apartment or your condo or your farmhouse, whatever you got, your cabin, okay? Yeah, and you slowly build until you got a week, 2 weeks, 4 weeks of excess food, and then 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months. And when you hit those little milestones, at least for me, I'm a goal setter. And so when you hit those little milestones, rejoice. Rejoice. Throw yourself a little party. Cook yourself a nice piece of meat. Maybe have a glass of wine. Nice cup of coffee if you're into that. Whatever you're into. Hey, we hit the 9-month mark. Praise Yah. The specifics of what to store is in the Prepper Classroom, which is free content here on YouTube. That I think there's close to 40 videos there that are all whiteboarded out with the math. Because as our brother Saul says, math is a blade that cuts through the bullshit. With the math on how many calories you actually need per person per day. And so that you're not aiming at an amorphous target. You actually have an idea of what the benchmarks are that you need to hit. So you can find that here free on this channel on YouTube. It's called The Prepper Classroom. It's got its own playlist. So click around, whether you're on a mobile device or a desktop or a tablet, click the Bear Independent channel, then click playlists and find The Prepper Classroom. So in Nigeria, they went from relative stability to food insecurity and economic hardship in 9 months. Following President Bola Tinubu's elimination of fuel subsidies, sounds a lot like Europe, doesn't it? And sweeping exchange rate reform when he came into office last May. In July, Abuja declared a state of emergency as a result of food shortages and surging prices. The country's National Bureau of Statistics previously stated that the year-on-year increase in food inflation was caused by price increases in commodities such as oil, yams, bread, cereals, and fish. The NBS, or National Bureau of Statistics, reported last week that Nigeria's inflation rate reached an all-time high of 31.7% in February. Now, the powers that be in Washington, D.C. are trying to convince us currently that the actual CPI, Consumer Price Index, an adjusted rate of inflation is somewhere between 5 and 6% right now in the United States. I think it's gaslighting because it makes a lot of people feel like, well, surely I must be the only person who's struggling to feed myself and pay bills, you know, because according to the reporting, everybody else is doing well. And there is a reason for that, because they don't want us unified against them. They want us fighting each other, Hegelian dialectic, which is why you see so many narratives about income classes, right? Socioeconomic classes, the struggle of the haves versus the have-nots. The race wars in the United States, helter skelter, man, in the United States of America, rampant racism, hands up, don't shoot, all of that stuff. It's why you see left versus right, Democrats versus Republicans. It's all Hegelian dialectic to keep us fighting each other so that we don't unite and fight them, because the actual rate of inflation has been estimated by other economists other than the federal government to be somewhere between like 15 and 21% in the United States of America. Well, at 31.7%, Nigeria lost it. They've been plagued by food insecurity and economic hardship. And while I don't want these things to happen in the United States of America, I think it's important that we take what lessons we can from around the world. And the lesson here with this article being, you should have food put up. Don't get in the bread line. Don't go to where the bread line is. Bad things happen at the bread line. Next article I wanted to look at. Let me bop back over here. Andrew Barnes, 100%. Good morning to everybody in the chat. Dana, Shalom, sister. Striker K, what's up, brother? Kerry, Share Bear, Scott Bonata, Blue Coats Academy, what's up, bro? Badger, Shalom. The 942 people here. If I go to the bread line, it's not to get in line. Right, Palmetto? Shalom, lovely Dudley. What's up, sister? So, yeah, Scott Bonata said, what about the water line? Yeah, don't get in the water line either if you can. On a day like today, it's a great day to be capturing resources as they fall from the sky. And I know some people live in jurisdictions where it's illegal to capture rainwater, and that to me is ludicrous. It's literally fallen out of the sky. It came from the Creator. And I understand the reason for that is the powers that be are concerned that if you capture enough of it, it won't fill up the public reservoirs and it won't be available to the nice people that live in the cul-de-sacs with the manicured lawns. Excuse me if I fail to care about that. If I can put up some IBC totes or some big black tanks and throw up some gutters and catch some water, I'm gonna, and you should, because water is very, very difficult to, or can be very, very difficult to acquire in certain climates, and it weighs a lot. So even storing like a month's worth of water in the suburbs is difficult to do. I've done it, but it's difficult to do. You're talking about a bunch of blue 55-gallon drums, rainwater barrels. At least that's what we did. JB's Garage, hit the like button. He says, bless you, bro. Second article I wanted to look at is titled, Ukraine's power imports almost triple. Kyiv has halted electricity exports after a series of attacks on its energy system. Now, I believe, I don't know beyond a shadow of a doubt, but I believe per the Geneva Conventions, purposefully attacking critical infrastructure like dams and electricity generation is a no-no. You're not supposed to do that because of the adverse effects on the civilian populace. That's been happening nonstop in the Russia v. Ukraine war, which, by the way, is now, per the Kremlin, per Vladimir Putin, officially, what's up, Buckets and Bibles? It's officially a war now, and that comes on the heels of this terrorist attack perpetrated by ISIS-K in Moscow at the dance hall concert, whatever it was, like 130 people were attacked. Building was set on fire. It was a massacre. And Putin et al. Basically said that they captured the guys who were responsible for it. I believe it was four attackers and then seven support personnel. There's an interesting number for you. Four attackers and seven support personnel. So total 11 individuals to the southwest of Moscow trying to get into Ukraine, so they say, which has led Russia to say that Ukraine was in some way involved in this attack, which, of course, Vladimir Zelensky of Ukraine patently denies. And Zelensky has said that it was a false flag operation performed by the Russians on their own people as a casus belli, as their 9/11 event, in order to escalate from a special military operation in Ukraine to a full-blown war. Regardless of what happened there, Putin has now said that Ukraine is a war, not a special military operation. Now, in this war, the Ukrainians have been targeting Russian oil refining capability for years, since this thing started. And in retaliation, Russia has been targeting the Ukrainian electrical grid and power generation. Both of those things, technically, I believe, are not allowed. Although, what does a rule matter if there's nobody to enforce it? Why should you care? Why do I care? Because the Ukrainians are attacking Russia's oil refining capability, and the Russians are attacking the Ukrainian power generation capability. Imagine if that was to occur here. Now, both of these are forms of energy. And as I understand it, energy's pricing is based upon demand on the margins. And so if demand spikes even a little bit, or if demand stays constant when supply drops even a little bit, you get disproportionate increases in pricing. And our country, in many ways, is powered by gasoline, diesel fuel, and electrons. And if the gasoline, diesel fuel, and electrons aren't flowing, or they're flowing at such a rate that only very few can afford them, you're going to have basically a systemic collapse of the transportation infrastructure in the United States of America. And what is it, 94%, 98%, in over the 90th percentile of everything you touch in your day was on the back of a semi truck at one time. Grocery stores have what, 3 days worth of food in them, max 3 days worth of food. Getting back to, you should have food put away. You should have water put away. You might want to make sure that, you know, like we have a policy in our family that you should not let your gas tank fall below half a tank of fuel, and we try and keep things topped off. And so having spare gas and diesel in cans that you rotate through so that they don't go bad, having fuel transfer tanks full of gasoline and diesel, propane, for example, if you have propane tanks that you use for heating, ventilation, air conditioning, or for cooking in your house, top your propane tanks off if you can. Have a spare propane tank if you can. Things of that nature. So let's look at this article from RT. Ukrainian electricity imports have risen almost threefold. We'll start with that, according to some Ukrainian blah, blah, blah. Okay, so they're importing electricity three times more than they were when the war started. Why? Because their ability to produce and transmit their own electricity has been hampered, in some cases severely, by the Russians. According to the Energy Ministry in Kyiv, which also said that the country has ceased almost all exports of electrical power following Russian strikes on infrastructure. Ukrainian minister, blah, 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 previously announced that power generation facilities, along with transmission and distribution systems, had been damaged across the country after the Russian military launched a powerful wave of air and missile strikes. Then it goes into megawatt hours, which probably bore most of y'all to death. But basically, they're currently importing almost 15,000 megawatt hours of electricity while exporting zero. Let's see. The ministry further claimed that Russia had attempted to strike a critical energy infrastructure facility in the Lviv region on Sunday after the facility had already caught fire and been de-energized. Power lines in Kyiv region were reportedly damaged as a result of the attack, with 1,400 households and two settlements suffering temporary blackouts. That's not that widespread of an area. If that was a transmission line, it was a small one, probably more likely distribution. On Friday, a Russian missile strike targeted the Dnipro hydro power plant. On Friday, a Russian missile targeted the Dnipro hydro power plant in the Ukrainian-controlled city of Zaporizhzhia. Urk Hydro Energy reported, adding that the facility had caught fire. At the same time, videos and photos circulating on social media appear to show a fire on a dam adjacent to the Dnipro hydropower plant. So this is specifically targeting that power plant. Is not only attacking a dam, which I believe is out of bounds, it's attacking electrical infrastructure, which is out of bounds. The barrage had stripped the DTEK group, Ukraine's largest private power generating company, of 50% of its generating capacity, according to the head of Yasno distribution firm. Meanwhile, massive blackouts were reported. Zelensky claimed that Moscow had used more than 60 drones and around 90 missiles of different types in the barrage. Commenting on the strikes, Russian MP Mikhail Sheremets stated that they were in response to Ukrainian attacks on Russian civilians in the Belgorod and other border areas, which left dozens of civilians dead. Moscow began targeting Ukrainian energy infrastructure in the autumn of 2022, almost 2 years ago, in retaliation for the bombing of the strategic Crimean Bridge in October of the same year. While Kyiv initially denied responsibility, it later claimed that the attack was intended to undermine Russian logistics. On Monday, the Chief of Security Service of Ukraine, Vasily Maluk, said the agency was responsible for the strikes on major Russian oil refineries. The facilities, along with other Russian infrastructure, are seen by Kyiv as legitimate targets. Now, the rumor is that the Americans, advisors, and the White House have been, I believe the words that were used, desperately pleading with the Ukrainians to no longer hit targets inside of Russia, including their refining capacity, and that the Ukrainians are continuing to do so anyway. Cool. That's probably going to end well for everybody. My point here is we have this concept in the preparedness space, which frankly is just obnoxious most of the time, that an EMP is what they, whoever they are going to use to take the grid down. And that's certainly possible, damn near even plausible in some cases. I mean, how many Chinese totally not spy balloons is it going to take, you know, with high altitude atomic weapons that could, you know, high altitude EMP that could take the grid off? I mean, we've let apparently dozens of them float across our continent in the last several years. It wouldn't take that many. But it doesn't take that to take the grid down. You can attack key pieces of infrastructure and the grid comes down, or it comes down to the point where it might as well not exist in the first place. And then you get into supply chain logistics of how do you repair this portion of the grid. It's not easy. It doesn't just happen. And if the grid being down impacts people's ability to communicate as well, communication is a cornerstone of logistics. So simply organizing the work to be done, assuming that you have all the pieces and parts in stock that are required to repair it in the first place, it's a crushing blow to the grid. And the Russians have been targeting Ukraine's electrical infrastructure for a couple of years. And so for you, again, for y'all, my takeaway from this for y'all is you should take that with a grain of salt. You should. It's almost like two courses of action for me. One is, how do I produce, technically excite electrons here locally, you know, with a microgrid of my own? Solar, backup generation, wind if possible. How do I do that for me and mine? For what reason? Honestly, mostly refrigeration, maybe a little bit of climate control, charging batteries for Camo and various other tools. Mostly that. So how do I produce slash excite my own electrons if the grid goes down? And then what areas am I using electrons for that is a nice to have, not a need to have? Right. So how do you scale back, and what things could you do without in SHTF, man, which is such an amorphous term that it's basically useless at this point, because it's become meaningless, because it's a conception. What SHTF means to me probably is wildly different than what it means to you, SHTF. And it creates so much latitude. You know, you can drive a truck through the concept of SHTF. And so it's damn near unequal weights and measures, because we're not actually talking about the same thing, are we? If I have a different definition of SHTF than you do, right? Which is why there's so much dissension in the ranks when it comes to preparedness, because you think it's going to be one thing, I think it's going to be another thing. And then, of course, we have our own means and methods to deal with whatever the perceived threat is in the first place. And it's like the term SHTF isn't serving anybody. It's not actually an accurate term at all, because nobody knows what SHTF is going to look like. But there's probably some characteristics that could define SHTF, to my point of food scarcity, food insecurity, a lack of water, external security threats, internal security threats, an unreliable or non-existent electrical grid, the restriction of your ability to move about the country freely, an increase in tyranny, and for me, especially the thought police, your ability to say whatever it is that you need to say without being censored. How about the ability to worship as you see fit and read your word without having your head cut off with a dull machete? Yeah, I mean, I would consider that SHTF. Were the Maccabees an SHTF? I think they were. Was it SHTF when the Hebrews, the Israelites, bugged out of Egypt the first time? Maybe. I mean, they were in the desert without running water, without electricity, without food until the Father gave them some. So you see what I mean? It's such an amorphous term to say when the shit hits the fan, bro. Which shit? Which fan? When? How fast was the fan going? Did any of that shit hit me when it flew off of the fan? Was I even in the room? Do I care? Was anybody I love in the room? Is there even a fan, or is it all a hypothetical? Did you perceive that some perceived shit hit a perceived fan and it threw shit all over the walls? Or did it actually happen? You see what I mean? So, but I digress. But there are some characteristics here of, let's say, a less than stellar situation that we could find ourselves in. one of which is a lack of a flow of electrons. And as discussed myriad times here, when the electrons stop flowing, society as we know it is going to stop flowing as well, because everything in this modern 2024 society is predicated on the successful flow of electrons, comma, logistics, fuel, medical, commerce, governance. It's all the backbone for all of that is the successful flow of electrons. And okay, we can make the argument, well, what about, a lot of fiber is done optically. Yeah, but what's a multiplexer, right? It takes the optical signal and converts it into an electrical signal, which is the flow of electrons. Okay. Do people even use T1 multiplexers anymore? You're probably on like T4 or T9 or T73 multiplexers at this point. My point is, it's still predicated on the successful flow of electrons. Right, Trevin? Fiber requires electrons for certain. 100%. Last article I wanted to look at. More of a critical infrastructure type piece. Maybe a quick delve into the role of a CEO in an organization. This comes from The Blaze. Boeing CEO and top executives to step down amid safety scandal. And this is quite the verbose article, so we may not read all of it. Boeing announced that CEO Dave Calhoun and other top executives will step down as part of a management shakeup prompted by safety and quality concerns over a mid-flight door panel blowout earlier this year, according to CNBC. Calhoun told Boeing employees on Monday, that's today, that he would leave the company at the end of 2024. Quote, as you all know, the Alaska Airlines Flight 1282 accident was a watershed moment for Boeing, Calhoun wrote. Quote, we must continue to respond to this accident with humility and complete transparency. We must also inculcate a total commitment to safety and quality at every level of our company, end quote. Next quote. The eyes of the world are on us, and I know we will come through this moment a better company, building on all the learnings we accumulated as we worked together to rebuild Boeing over the last number of years, end quote, Calhoun added. He told CNBC that his decision to step down was 100% his own. Calhoun took over the position in January 2020, blah, blah, blah. Boeing Commercial Airplane CEO Stan Deal also retired from the company effective immediately. Amid the management overhaul, he has been replaced by Stephanie Pope, Boeing's chief operating officer. Additionally, the chairman of the board, Larry Kellner, will resign and not seek re-election in May, and Steve Mollenkopf, a Boeing director, will replace Kellner and lead the board in selecting a new CEO. And blah, blah, blah. It goes on and on and on and on from here. Boeing was unable to find records for repairs made to the airplane that experienced the panel blowout. Before delivering the aircraft to Alaska Airlines, the plane underwent rivet repairs, which required the door panel to be temporarily removed. NTSB stuff, not looking great for Boeing, blah, 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 blah. With respect to documentation, if the door plug removal was undocumented, there would be no documentation to share, said Boeing. Okay. So Boeing CEO, dude, is stepping down. This is, first of all, an indicator for me. I've never enjoyed flying, although I've done it many times reluctantly in my life. But in light of the post-pandemic COVID-19 TSA BS, that's a lot of acronyms, I just decided I'm not flying anymore. If there's a place that I need to go that it's important enough for me to get there, I will figure out how to get there in my truck. Also remember, the Boeing whistleblower accidentally shot himself in the head a couple of times recently. That was last week. So there's some stuff going on behind the scenes, I'm sure, at Boeing. And then we have one of y'all who is an aviation mechanic, works for a company full of aviation mechanics, who consistently sends us awesome boots on the ground intel, which is intel@barondependent.com. That's the email address. And so based upon the reporting that we've gotten from that fella, I'm 0% interested in getting on a plane. And then you have Boeing 737s and 737 MAX 8s and all these other things, like literally falling apart in the sky. I'm good, man. I'm super duper good. Now, regarding the role of a CEO in a company, there's a really good book that I'm almost through with. If you're in a company and if you're the CEO, the founder, or you're in the C-suite, or even mid-level management, just like Extreme Ownership talks about the ability to lead up the chain of command as well as down the chain of command, same thing with this book. Regardless of where in the organization you might be, it's titled, A CEO Only Does Three Things, by some guy. And if you have Google or Amazon, you can find it. A CEO only does three things. And those three things are people, culture, and numbers. And so Mr. Boeing guy, who stepped down, Dave Calhoun, it makes me wonder, amid this Boeing debacle that's going on, where was the issue, or was it a compound issue? Was it the people at Boeing? Was it the culture at Boeing? Was it the numbers? Were they cutting corners due to cost, or was it all three? And even if you have a multi-billion dollar international conglomerate like Boeing, if the guy or girl in charge, the CEO, chief executive officer, doesn't interact with the people, isn't selective in the people that they bring on board, doesn't motivate the company through culture and clearly define the left and right limits, and doesn't pay attention to the numbers, the company will fail. It's as simple as that. And so if you are out there operating a business, even if it's a small business, I would say especially if it's a small business, because when it's a small business, you have to wear multiple different hats, one of which is the CEO. You should read that book. A CEO only does three things, and they are people, culture, and numbers. Of course, it's much more fleshed out in the book than what I just gave you. Trevin, teams without good leadership get schwacked frequently. There you go. So the CEO of Boeing is stepping down, and he's probably stepping down in order to create the perception that Boeing is being proactive in dealing with whatever their ongoing issues are. And hopefully they are being proactive in whatever their issues are. They may not be, though. We don't know. I don't work at Boeing. If you do, if you're on the inside of Boeing or anybody else like that, intel@bearindependent.com. That's what I wanted to talk to you guys and girls about today. I am going to tell you about a few other things. The first is, I was unaware, but I checked this morning. Sanctified Supply Co. is still offering shirts from our brother Saw and our brother Rex. And the proceeds of those shirts help us build Caleb House, which is our anti-human trafficking ministry, which is very active. I have literally people in the field right now doing their jobs. And I would be at Caleb House this morning myself building it, but gigantic rain. So we're going to wait a little bit until gigantic rain subsides. But if you're interested in a t-shirt, Saw's Facts Not Feeling shirt, or our brother Rex's the Real Dope shirt, there are links in the description down below, as well as on Patreon. And the proceeds of those shirts help us fund Caleb House. Both the construction and our ongoing field operations, which are not slowing down in the least. In fact, we're becoming more and more hooked up on the field side, which, praise Yah. I hate the fact that this problem exists. I love the fact that we get to do something about it. So let's see. RefugeMedical.com. The media team reluctantly admits their typo. The nods that are being given away by Refuge are not white phosphorus, because you definitely don't want white phosphorus in your eyes. That'll be really, really bad for you. They're white phosphor, dual tube, Gen 3, night observation devices, nods. And so right now at Refuge Medical, all orders through the 1st of May, over $199, get you automatically entered to win a hard-headed veteran's bump helmet, a nod mount, and a pair of dual tubes from Nightfall. And it's well over $10,000 value, and we will select one person. They will. Technically, I'm the CEO of Refuge, but when it comes to the day-to-day management of like, who's going to win the thing? I have 0% involved in that. I have people for that, praise Yah. Comma. Yeah, no Willie Pete's, Jacob A. That's correct. No Willie Pete's in your eyes. Dual tubes, did you say? Holy moly. Yeah, Killdozer. I did say dual tubes. So that's happening at Refuge Medical. And in addition to that giveaway, should you choose to support our small business, there's a bunch of kits that were unavailable that are back in stock today. One of which is the ankle kit. Another one of which is the SOB. SOB is this. It's the small of the back kit. It weighs as much as one loaded AR mag. You've got your tourniquet on the outside, shock corded on. And then this is PALS webbing compatible on the back. It's got your malice clips here and webbing. And then you can run this right side up or upside down, whichever you prefer. On my plate carrier, I run it upside down like this so I can get the tourniquet with either hand, no problem. And I can pop this open, grab the red handle, and pull. And now I've got my blowout kit, which is, of course, made in America, in my hand. And this has chest seals and combat gauze and wound packing gauze and a pressure bandage and a nasal pharyngeal airway and a Sharpie and all the things. This little suitcase has all the things in it. And so SOBs have been harder to find than hen's teeth for the last few months. But we do have some SOBs back in stock, as well as the bare FAC and the bare minimum and the ankle kit and the adventure kit and a bunch of other things. So if you've been patiently waiting, they're back. Same thing with the ankle kit. The ankle kit, I literally cannot keep in stock. It has been impossible for me to keep it in stock since we launched it. And I'm telling you this morning, it's there. If you want one, go get an ETA on the SOB version 2 inner pouch and kit. Striker Cade, you're not supposed to know about the SOB version 2. We don't talk about that on camera. It's actually not even called the SOB version 2. It's called the OpFac. And some of my guys just ran it at the Moons Out Goons Out 2024 event with Forgotten Weapons and Hop and Brass Facts and I don't remember who else was there, a bunch of other people, because Refuge sponsored one of the stages of the nighttime shooting event that was Moons Out Goons Out. And that stage, the TACMED stage, we had several people who were not our people, just randos, run that kit to look at the ability to deploy that kit under nods in the dark while being timed, you know, a little bit of pressure, a little bit of accountability, to get a tourniquet on a 220-pound dummy, then do a buddy drag. And then I believe from there, I wasn't there, but I believe from there they went into a shoot house with frangibles and shot a bunch of targets. So maybe not the most realistic scenario, but it definitely combined a bunch of different things like 50-meter sprint, tourniquet, buddy drag, going in and clearing a house, a shoot house with nods in the dark. So that was pretty cool. And we also had a bunch of dudes jump out of planes with it, which you'll see a lot of the media coming back from that. And so it's in its final tweaks right now. It is a different application than the SOB, though. So if you've been waiting on an SOB, we've got SOBs back. Ankle kit is sold out, says Mike Luz. Really? Let's go look. www.refugemedical.com. First aid kits. View all IFACs. Sold out. Ankle kit is sold out. Guys, I'm telling you. I'm telling you. I cannot. What's up, 12C? Shalom. I cannot keep these things in stock. Yes, 2 to 4 week lead times on the kits. Thank you for bringing that up, Kevin Timmer. I've been telling you guys and girls for over a year that supply chain is ridiculous and it is getting more ludicrous by the day. And it is very much so my intention, my goal to sell only what we have under roof. And as a result, because of that, it's taken longer lead times. It's physically not possible for me to acquire the volume of inventory I would like to have as of the 25th of March, 2024. Comma, if you buy a kit from us and it says 2 to 4 week lead time, you will get it in 2 to 4 weeks. We've had, Liberty says she's fixing it. Okay, stand by for ankle kits. Hold on. Let me hit refresh. Not yet. Everybody hold on. Liberty's fixing it. It's all good. Hey, I don't know if you guys know this. We are a small business composed of humans. But having a lead time on there, it's almost like, think about it like reserving your seat, right? When you call a restaurant and you make a reservation. Kevin Timmer, 2 to 4 weeks is nothing for quality products. I appreciate you. I appreciate that. It's almost like reserving your seat at a restaurant. We will hold that seat for you. We will hold that kit for you. And the moment it comes in stock, we will ship it out to you. And it's getting that way. A, as the popularity of Refuge Medical grows, combined with the diminishing availability of components on the supply chain side, it just is what it is. And really the only way for me to combat that would be to make a huge capital investment that would require me to go in debt. And I'm not going to do that because I like the fact that we own Refuge Medical, that we're not owned by a bank or a private investment firm or anybody else. And that allows what we do to be a lot more organic and to be able to do things on the fly as we see fit without having to run it past the investors. And because Liberty is badass, the ankle kit is back in stock now. So I'm going to go ahead and grab that link and drop it in the chat for you. So that's what's going on at Refuge Medical. Got nods, spent $199. You get entered for nods, and a bunch of kits are back in stock, some of which with lead times for the reasons just mentioned. Grindstoneministries.com. If you need a Bible and you don't have a Bible, come see us at grindstoneministries.com. Links are in the description for all this stuff. Speaking of Bible, the Patreon video this morning was, how does Bear study the Bible? Because I've gotten that question so many times on Patreon, I just went ahead and shot a video about it. You can get the scriptures from grindstoneministries.com. Link is in the description. If you'd like to buy one, you can buy them at our cost. Not a penny more than our cost. We don't mark them up because it's the word of Elohim. And while, yes, you could make the argument that a workman is worth their hire and don't muzzle the ox as it treads out the grain, I'm blessed that I have businesses that support my financial needs, and therefore I don't need to extrapolate any value out of the ministries. And so our 501c3s don't pay me any money. I don't want them to pay me any money. And we do things at cost with the 501c3. Because I have Bear Independent, and I have Refuge Medical, and I have a consultancy, and I have all the other things that I do that feed my family. So anyway, you can get Bibles from grindstoneministries.com at our cost. Or if you cannot afford one, just contact us through the website. Arthur Wabina, this morning's video was absolutely awesome. Thank you for sharing. You're welcome, brother. Bless you. Praise Yah. If you can't afford a Bible, you can contact us through grindstoneministries.com, and we'll send you one at no cost. Just tell us where to send it, because a lot of y'all contact us and say, hey, I need a Bible. Okay. I don't know where you live. So tell me where to send it, and I'll send it to you. Cool. Caleb House. I'm still not over the Refuge Ruckus. I'm still not over the fact that 250 people got together and rucked to benefit Caleb House. And the money raised was amazing, but that wasn't the primary goal. I didn't even know what the primary goal was until after we did it. We just knew we were going to get together, and we were going to have speakers and presenters. We were going to study the word together. We were going to have vendors. And then we were going to go on a ruck. And we did all those things. But to say that that's what we did makes it sound almost commoditized. It was way more than that. 42 people got baptized. I got to speak to hundreds of y'all directly, face to face, pray with a bunch of y'all, meet your kids, meet your wife, hang out, fellowship. It was amazing, absolutely amazing. And we have to do more things like that. We, meaning me and us organizationally, because it was so good. Did we raise money for Caleb House? Yes, we did. And that was awesome. But it's almost as if that was a tertiary byproduct of the fact that we all came together as believers to worship Yah and fellowship with our brothers and to throw a middle finger up at pedophiles. It was an awesome event. And I'm still not over it. It was an incredible event. As you guys know, we have ongoing construction at Caleb House. The first care house is built, but we have to move it on property. And so the foundation is half poured. It needs to get all the way poured, which is weather dependent. And then it can be moved on property. The barn is still under construction, and that's in large part my fault. It's been a scheduling thing. And the scheduling thing has been exacerbated by volunteers coming from different parts of the country, coupled with the literally unpredictable Oklahoma spring weather. I mean, you can get hail, a sunburn, a tornado, and a frost warning all in the same week, and possibly flooded all in the same week in our area of the world right now. And so that has exacerbated the scheduling thing as well, but it is ongoing. And I'll be the first one to tell you guys and girls, we don't know everything there is to know about this. We've made tons of mistakes along the way, but we're learning and we're still doing. We're very active in the field, working against bad people and restoring good people, and very active as far as building is concerned as well. There's a literal mountain worth of dirt work to do. Like, I could probably sit on a dozer, like a D6 high track dozer. I could spend 6 months on a dozer just all day, every day, and still have dirt work to do. And so it's a phase thing, but we're getting there. So thank you to everybody who's supporting what we do at Caleb House. And again, that URL is Caleb with a K, house, calebhouse.org. And again, our brother Saw, our brother Rex, their t-shirts, the links are in the description. Lamppost, it will happen. Yes, it will. There's no doubt in my mind that it will happen. It's a foregone conclusion. I'm already planning the next one in my brain. It just is what it is. So, yeah, that's the Caleb House update. And that's what we have to talk about today. So let's go ahead and talk to the Father real quick, and then we're going to call it a day. Good morning, Father. Yeah, Father, thank you for allowing us to wake up today. Father, thank you that we just had rain and not big, dangerous storms last night. Father, thank you for all the myriad things that we take for granted. First and foremost, the people that love us and the people that we love. Father, show us all of your little miracles today. All the things that we would steamroll right past. Father, shine a light on them today. Help us be focused on being thankful and remain rooted in you, and not take the simple, beautiful things for granted. Father, thank you for the opportunity to serve you to the best of our broken ability. Thank you for redemption by the blood of your Son, that we might come home again. Father, thank you for all these people. Father, I pray that you'd bless them today, that you would pour out your Spirit on them for wisdom and discernment. that you would give us strength and power and authority in the name of Yeshua HaMashiach, and that you would give us peace that surpasses all understanding, even in the face of adversity, of everything that this world tries to throw against us every day. Father, let no weapon formed against us prosper. Father, keep your people safe and rain down judgment on those that aren't your people. Father, thank you for all this. Father, please bless us today, protect us today, and provide for us today. In Yeshua's name, amen. And that's what I got for y'all today. I hope you have a beautiful, wonderful Monday, and that the mundaneness of Monday does not overwhelm the holiness of Yah for you. And I'll see y'all when I see y'all. Shalom.